American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day to you. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Tuesday, January 25th, 2005. And I got to tell you, I'm feeling a whole lot stronger today than I was yesterday. And I'll probably feel stronger tomorrow than I did today. And why is that, you may ask? It's because of SCOP. Yes, the powers of synthetic proteins. We're loving single-cell proteins and synthetic proteins and proteins that we can make sure are processed by our bodies. Hack the body. This last time I was sick on Wednesday, I was sick. Really sick, missed a show, and I felt very, very bad about that. As I must confess, a lot of people were very cool about it. I was very touched by how everyone responded on my live journal, which, of course, if you are not listening to this regularly, like you should be, you will not know that I post all the stories that I read during Newsreel onto my live journal, so you can read along with me in, you know, off of, you know, sort of the temporal light book that is my live journal, and you know it's time to turn the page when you hear me go, next story! So, glad you could make it on board, glad you're here, and we're going to get right into the news today with, actually, we're not going to get right into the news today. Sorry, I lost my place on my sheet when I was talking about reading along with me in a book, but that's all right, that's all part of the joy that is this show. I am your host, Sean Kennedy, and we're going to get right into underway with some feedback, first and foremost. Dear friend, Call of Cthulhu, now, anyone knows, of course, that I am a huge Call of Cthulhu nut bar. I am a Call of Cthulhu man. My entire cyberpunk roots come from Call of Cthulhu, so that would explain why I'm such a dark and merciless bastard. They've been talking about this Call of Cthulhu video game. It was been talked about for like 2 years now, and it was supposed to be a four-person cooperative game, very, very cool. You all, like, four guys get together, and it's set in the 1920s, so four guys show up, and you all take on a haunted house. I mean, this is something that any gamer would have just the biggest boner in the world for, and it was like, it was coming out, then it wasn't coming out, then nobody knew what was happening to it, and it was really annoying, hated it a lot. So I was just like, and then I forgot about it because, you know, you get involved with trying to save the world and stuff. And you know, luckily there's people out there who keep track of my interests for me, so I don't have to do that. You know, me just being merely a small node of server that happens to see a lot of traffic, I feel very blessed that people manage to keep track of my interests so that they can tell me when things come out, such as this. Dear friend, Call of Cthulhu, Dark Corners of the Earth, will come out to PC on the 1st of February. Ooh, giggle. Here's the official site, callofcthulhu.com. I'm not going to spell that. You can just look that up. The puzzle shooter with a sanity meter. Yeah, now that the way that works is that if you see something, your sanity can change in your avatar in the game. I guess that you and the Dark One will be busy for the next 6 months. Wow, how bad do you think I am with games, man? But you have that thing licked in 4 hours. We're talking about me going, I've cleared more haunted houses with a Tommy gun than you could possibly dream, dude. No, I'm just screwing around. Sock, who's a killer guy. Unfortunately, I would like to be playing this game, but none of my computers are fast enough. Everything I have is too old. Too old to begin the training. Yeah, can't do it. Sucks to be me. When will Newsreel feature Call of Cthulhu updates? Well, I shouldn't, you know, because I'm not really, you know, a Call of Cthulhu guy, but I'm a raving, screaming fanboy, old school of Call of Cthulhu. I mean, yeah, it's like everybody has to kiss Gary Gygax's ass just once, you know? I've been trying to keep out of the 40 and times and stuff like that out of the news. I've been trying to keep that out of the, you know, this is supposed to be a little bit more serious, but, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff that's going on. I mean, you can't be all doom and gloom all the time. I mean, come on, this is a great game. It's coming out. I think everyone should support it, you know, to keep that particular genre alive. And that was sent to me by Dosotaku, which is like otaku, only with DS on the front of it. Another piece of feedback I got here from all my glorious, glorious listeners, who I'm really, really impressed with, how much mail I'm getting. I try to get back to you as quick as I can. You'll notice over the weekends there's a big lag because I have to catch up because I actually unplug, which everyone should for at least one day. And, you know, the volume of mail I get is just staggering. Next feedback one here to Sean. So what do you do for a job? Sometime you say you work as a security guard job. Sometime you work at home or have your own business. You don't have to put this on the air, but I'm just curious. Your friend, Grant, Faithful Walk. Okay, well, a lot of people have asked me that. They say, Sean, you had a computer business, and what happened with that? My computer business died. Died. Why? Because, well, everybody has one of those little Mr. Fix-It computer businesses where you're running around inside a van and try to fix stuff. I started the business after I kind of got screwed over and lost my job, went into that, dropped a bunch of money, lost a bunch of money, and, you know, and as my business failed, I basically, that's when I fell off the web. If you're looking for a time correlation, as my business tried to crash, I was trying to do everything with Rant Radio, run my business, do all this kind of stuff, and when the business crashed, of course, anyone who's ever been involved with business, I'm sure that Goon Squad guys. I don't talk a lot about my personal financial situation because it's not really pertinent. It's not like it's anyone's business. It's just that, you know, all it's going to do is bum everybody out, and, you know, people are donating, so that's cool. You know what? Eventually, I'm going to be able to just do this full-time, and the quality of all my product will go up, and everyone will be happy, and no one has to buy media anymore because I just give it away for free. Ta-da! Look how that works. It's perfect. But what do I do for employment now? I work a 40-hour work week at a place I will call the warehouse. And what this warehouse does is it buys everything that is customer returns. And so we get everything from, like, beds that have puppies born on them. And just you wouldn't believe the crap that comes through the door. And anything that's, like, electronic or I get Roombas, all that kind of stuff, comes to me and I fix it. That's pretty much how it works. Which sounds like, holy crap, man, you're like the professor from Gilligan's Island. Yeah, well, if I did this for 25 years and was like a super ninja at it, then yeah, I would be the professor from Gilligan's Island. However, most of it's just, you know, like time and you know, trying to get everything going. So that's basically what I do for 40 hours a week. And unfortunately, the place where I work is kind of sweatshop. They kind of track everything you do, you know. They're not locking the bathrooms yet, but I punch a clock, and, you know, you have to be on the floor at a certain time and all this kind of junk. So it's in a way, I like to think of it as very good because it keeps me, you know, so that I know what, because a lot of you out there have jobs like this. You know what I mean? Like, I've had jobs like this my whole life, and that's why I'm able to, you know, while I'm doing these totally menial tasks and, you know, taking things apart, like fixing 20 things at a time, and you have to do each one and building exercise equipment, or whatever the hell they got me doing that day, you begin thinking about things, and you begin to escape inside your mind, and that's why I've been in jobs like this my whole life. You know, I've never really had, like, I did the IT thing for a while, but because I'm able to hold on to jobs like this, it frees up my brain to think on other things. So I do that for about 40 hours a week, and then on Friday nights I talk about a thing called Fight Club, where I go and I essentially kind of bounce at this bar, but I don't bounce in the bar, I'm out in the parking lot, so when people get drunk and decide to kill each other in the parking lot, I lead a crew of about 5 or 6 guys. And we go in there, and they make sure I don't get my ass kicked. That's pretty much how it works. If it wasn't for guys out there whose names I can't remember, but I know he's probably going to listen to this broadcast, really sorry, because one of the guards is one of the guys with us, and I think he listens. So I can't remember your online name, and I'm not going to give away your real name on the air, but you know who you are, big guy. So, yeah, that's what I do there. And then on Saturdays is my unplug day. Don't even try to talk to me. And then on Sunday, I'm filming, patrolling with Sim every day. So, and then in the evening on Sundays, Sim and I record the show. We go from there. So it's a full day Sunday, and then we record the evening. Oh, and every day when I come home from work, of course, after an 8-hour day, I have to do the show list layout, answer all the email, run my dog, record the show, process the show, upload the show to the server, and then hopefully my wife still talks to me. And, you know, I repeat, you know, that's pretty much my life right now. It's a hard run, but this is why, you know, you can see how a guy got sick, because you start getting a little bit run down and things aren't, you know, you're not getting as much rest as maybe you should because you're trying to have fun at the same time. Not really the best thing to do. So this is why it's very important that you try to hold on to your health as best you can by not poisoning yourself with toxic food, which I'll get back to that SCOP thing in a bit. Don't you worry. We'll get into this. But first, sort yourself out. Hello, Mr. Kennedy. I wanted to ask you something related to a current event at a local school. Just recently, at middle school in my hometown, there was a fight between five kids. One of these kids, a seventh grader, so we're talking like, what, 12, 13, somewhere in there, was found with a .38 snub-nosed revolver, six shots, all live rounds. Uh-huh. And a seventh grader. I'm in a high school, a good seven blocks away, and this scared me. Because if a kid can get a firearm into the middle school, which has high security, anyone could get one into the high school, which only has three teachers at the main doors. I've seen no cover of this of the websites of my local news stations, or I would have a link for you, and there was a 10-second blurb on my local Channel 12 News. If this isn't newsworthy of mainstream coverage, what is? I wanted to ask you, what do you think of school violence? Not only school shootings, but of kids getting into fights, what makes it okay to do it? Do you think these kids have any right to walk into schools with a .38? Okay, well, that's a lot of questions there. But let's start, first of all, with the walk into school with a .38. Do you have a right to do that? Absolutely not. No. If you find yourself putting a gun in the bag to go back to school, and let's make sure we understand that I know what I'm talking about. I was severely beaten for a period of about 4 years on a school bus. The way it used to work when I was growing up is we jump onside the school bus, and it would take everyone to both the junior high school and the senior high school, because that's how it works in Canada. You got junior and senior high. And the junior high schools were like grade 8 through 10, right? And then the senior high was 10 to 12, which sounds kind of dumb, which is only 2 years, but whatever. So what happened is there was a couple of burned out, you know, drug scumbag losers, about five or six of them, who were the weird older kids who came from bad homes. And I was a freak my whole life. I was always kind of like this weird, hyper-intelligent kid that had no friends. So what happened was I became a target. And for quite a while there, I was getting really badly tuned on a bus like two, three times a week. And it was never actually the beating. It was the fear of the beating. And the guy would come and sit beside you. And then they just, four guys all sit around you. And they degrade you for about a 30-minute bus ride. And, you get snot kicked and you leave the bus crying and you're all shaking and you're all pissed off and you don't know what to do. So there was a day, once upon a time, when I managed to acquire a firearm. And I made it halfway to school with the gun. You know, so when I hear about things like Columbine, I know what those kids are thinking. I know exactly what's going on in that kid's brain. And I'm not ashamed to say this. This would have been, oh, cripe, almost coming up on 10, 12 years ago now. But, I mean, when you look back on that, actually longer than that now, holy crap, 14 years. But when you look back on that and you say, you know, well, does that give them the right? You got to understand these kids putting guns in their hands, they're not in their right state of mind, okay? These kids are living in a state of fear. And the fear gets heightened because they're afraid of being beaten. The kid doesn't take the gun to school, .38 to school, because he wants to kill. He takes a gun to school because he wants to protect himself. That's why he takes a gun to school. Now, as to the question of schoolyard violence... there has always been schoolyard violence. There's always been bullying. There will always be schoolyard violence and bullying, and they try to beat it down as best they can. But all that happens is, you know, the violence gets transferred to bathrooms and to areas where, you know, the teachers cannot go. It goes almost to like a prison style. I mean, prisons are more locked down than anything else in the United States, and you think that they'd be able to stop the violence in prisons. You can't stop the violence in the prisons. You can't stop the rapings in the prisons. I mean, they talk about all these horrible things that happened to these prisoners in Abu Dhabi, whatever that prison was, you know, but no one talks about what's happening to American prisoners in American prisons by other Americans. You know, no one's talking about, like, you know, these guys getting dressed up with hoods over their heads. You know, meanwhile, there's a guy getting, you know, gang raped by eight steroid monkeys. And no one's talking about that because it's commonplace. You see what I mean? Something that Ice-T said on an album was that slavery is abolished except for the convicted felon, which is true. I mean, now, granted, there are people in jail who deserve to be in jail because they're psycho. Okay, and they're evil and they're bad and they're a threat to society and all the rest of it. You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, that certain people don't belong in some sort of an institution. But, I mean, can we at least, let's try to sort out these institutions. So, do I think that nothing makes violence okay to do in school? So when you ask what makes it okay to do it, nothing makes it okay. These are young men trying to establish their dominance in the world. And the way they do this is through violence, because we have a hyper-violent culture. There's a lot of fear in our culture, a lot of repression, a lot of feelings of abandonment. Kids feel abandoned. They have no point of reference. They are trying to prove themselves to see who can be more badass to their friends. The reasons go on and on and on and on and on. But in answer to your question, I don't think that, why isn't this covered in the news? Why isn't this covered in this? I don't think you will see anything in the news. I don't think you'll see anything about it because the news only puts out what the news wants to put out. I mean, it's not illegal to lie to you in the news. I'll say that again. It's not illegal to lie to you in the news. You should check out a documentary, if you haven't seen it yet, called The Corporation. There's some scary footage in there about just what goes on with the news. And, I mean, the news is about entertainment. You know, I mean, guns in schools aren't really cool right now. Now terrorism's hot. That's the hot thing. You know, and that's what everybody's going with. So I hope that answers your question for Sort Yourself Out. Topak. Opinions. Let's talk about SCOP. Now, for those of you who don't know about SCOP, I'm linked to this off my live journal, but I'm just going to read you this. SCOP is a term from Islands in the Net by Bruce Sterling, who I respect very, very much. Okay, you don't eat cows, chickens, or fish. How about smaller creatures? Really small, single-cell protein, SCP, is making a competitive inroads on soybean, fish meal, and feed supplementation. And this is a quote from Islands in the Net by Bruce Sterling, which was published by William Morrow in 88. David was a health food nut, a great devotee of unnatural foods. After 8 years of marriage, Laura was used to it. At least the SCOP was improving. Even the SCOP, single-cell protein, was better these days. It tasted all right, and you could forget the image of protein vats crammed with swarming bacteria. The word SCOP is what you get when you try to say the acronym SCP, single-cell protein, as a word. Now, this is the whole concept of SCOP. Now, with all this stuff that's going on with meat right now, with all this stuff that's happening with, the fish is now, we're finding out it's full of mercury. I got stories about that today. Scary. I mean, realistically, the cyberpunk world is here, okay? Let's just get over it, all right? We got brains moving stuff. We got bulletproof clothing for sale. Dude, we're in, you know, Dark City 2020 right now. So you may as well start bracing up for it. Let's start changing our diets so we don't find out when everybody else starts getting, you know, their brains getting eaten by prions from mad cow disease, you know, and they start calling it Alzheimer's. You know, no one's really talking about Alzheimer's too much. I mean, oh, Alzheimer's, yeah, that's what it is. You know, no one's really sure what Alzheimer's is, but they notice that the instances of Alzheimer's is going higher and higher and higher, and no one's talking about how mad cow disease and Alzheimer's might be the same thing. Because if you eat a steak that's got mad cow disease, okay, it can lay dormant in your system for something like 30 years and then activate and start chewing up your brain. Not cool. Not cool. Don't like the thought of the brain being chewed up because realistically, you know, those few pounds of, electrodes, water, and fat is really all you got with a little bit of nutrients. That's really you. That's where you currently reside. So it's best to look after the old brain box. And I'm thinking that SCOP might be a direction of food that, you know, the vegans and the meat eaters and everyone could just, you know, get together. You know, we could all just come together under one nice big fat pirate flag and, maybe we'll eat some really, really tiny little bugs. Into the news. The Russian Republic charges a topographer, a map maker for us humans, with selling state secrets, which would be a map. Yorkshire Ola, I guess that's the name of the area, on the 19th of January, the Federal Security Service, FSB, Directorate of the Republic of Mary L., has instituted a criminal proceedings for divulging state secrets. The charge has been leveled against a principal specialist in the topographic department of the Mary Trust for survey construction work. He faces up to 4 years in prison for the offense in a Russian jail. That just sounds nasty. The head of the press service, the FSB director for Mariel, Dmitry Ostov, told the Itar Tass correspondent that the accused, who is yet to be named, sold secret documents to somebody without access to state secrets, namely a catalog of coordinates of all the geodesic points in the republic. The suspect had to access to secret information and therefore realized he was committing a crime. When investigators searched his flat, they found another 250 documents, half of which, according to experts, are secret. Okay, well, now let's look at that line. When investigators searched his flat, they found another 250 documents, half of which, according to experts, are secret. Okay, if you were to search my house right now, you will find stuff that is listed as classified A and classified B. I bet you, because you're listening to this program, okay, you've probably got some classified stuff on your computer. Which, you know, you've gotten a hold of or somebody sent you because it's cool and it's classified stuff, you know, and it's not like above top secret or nothing, it's just classified. You know, and everybody's got it. This is a perfect example of a WIM law in Russia. Poor bastard. This is the first case in the Republic's history to be instituted under Article 283 of the Criminal Code of the Russian Federation. Wow, that sounds like a criminal code I don't want to mess with, which deals with the divulging of state secrets. Now, here's a link submitted by Hammer, the Hammerman, who is a badass. And it seems that in Canada, vitamins are becoming drugs like they are in Codex. Check this out. Codex is a subcommittee of the United Nations mandated to establish guidelines on the food trade issues. Such guidelines are not legally binding for any nation, but nations which are part of the World Trade Organization can be severely sanctioned anyway. In the early 1990s, Codex began to look at establishing internationally harmonized standards for food supplements. In 2002, the European Union Directive produced such guidelines for Codex. It turns out their effect will certainly be able to stop the availability of all vitamins, minerals, enzymes, and most other essential nutrients as food supplements. They are slated to be treated as pharmaceutical drugs, eventually available only on prescription, and manufactured by pharmaceutical companies with synthetic materials, including from genetically engineered substances. Well, isn't that great? Due to interlocking international treaties specified by the WTO, this is why we hate this, in 1995, and still to be ratified by the Free Traders of the Americas, Canada and the U.S. would be facing serious sanctions if they do not adopt these guidelines. Codex authority is already part of the treaty's text. Australia, Norway, Denmark, and Germany already have adopted these foods as drugs guidelines. Health Canada's website already lists the European Parliament Commission's upper safe limits on supplements as desirable for Canadians to follow, which, incidentally, those upper safe limits are crap. Without parliamentary debate, Health Canada snuck up on us and moved all supplements under the drug category effective of January 2004 in order to get us used to being harmonized. This treachery prompted Bill C-420, as discussed below. Consumer groups and various medical associations throughout the world have joined forces with the Alliance of Natural Health, Europe's voice for the supplement industries, to challenge this directive in the International Court in Luxembourg as a violation of the EU Constitution. The 25 member states differ widely in medical norms. There's, like, essentially what this article goes on to say, check it out. It's saying that they're going to take vitamins, like vitamin A, B, C, you know, what, Flintstones, chewables. Yeah, that's all prescription now. Prescription, vitamins. Has anybody else seen a problem here? If they can do that, we're really losing all of our, like, okay, they wanted to call pot, you know, a drug, which is fine. You know, you can do that, declare war on that, you know, and just, you know, rape this perfectly good plant that's been used to treat depression for centuries. Or, you know, and that relies people to, you know, take vitamins and B vitamins and stuff like that. And people who take B vitamins and ginkgo and all this kind of stuff, such as myself, we know that it works, okay? We know it does stuff for your cognitive ability, okay? You need to take this stuff in order to stay on the edge where you gotta be. You gotta stay sharp, otherwise you're just gonna get blown away. All right, it's part of the package. And if you can't do that, then, dude, you're going to get killed. But, you know, no, that's what they're doing. They're saying, yeah, consumer groups, they want to make it all like drugs, so it's all a prescription. And if you don't believe that's happening, they're already doing it in Europe, man. This is a Europe standard. You want another reason to go for scop and kind of join into the whole cyberpunk? Hey, if I can grow it, make it myself, and grow my own superfood, my shizzle? You want another reason to go then? How about this one right here? In America, 1 in 6 children born every year have been exposed to mercury levels so high that they're potentially at risk for learning disabilities and motor skill impairment and short-term memory loss. Let's not worry about them getting into the crap in high school. Let's just get them as soon as they're in the womb there. That type of mercury exposure is caused by eating certain kinds of fish, which contain high levels of the toxin from both natural and man-made sources, such as emissions from coal-fired power plants. One government analysis shows that 630,000 children every year are exposed to potentially unsafe mercury levels in the womb. If the government and its scientists know about this mercury problems, why do so many people continue to be poisoned? Well, it's easy, because there's no money in stopping it, so who cares? Over recent years, NOW has examined how the influence of the tuna industry, oh, there it is, on the FDA may be putting Americans and their children at risk for mercury poisoning. Tuna, widely known for its health benefits, is one of the most popular foods on grocery store shelves. And in 2000, FDA draft advisories printed out focus groups warned women not to eat a lot of canned tuna during pregnancy because it contains levels of mercury that can harm developing fetuses and nursing babies. But if you're not, you know, trying to create a life, then that's okay. You can poison yourself all to hell. In March 2004, the FDA and EPA issued the first ever joint advisory on this topic in an article paper called What You Need to Know About the Mercury in Fish and Shellfish. Okay, well, let me tell you something. I'm a big fan of sushi. Liking the sushi. Okay, I've eaten all kinds of sushi. I've even had sushi. I got this little sushi place that I go to, okay? It's actually, what the hell, I'll give them a plug. The place is called Samey. If you're ever in Vancouver, or actually, well, if you're ever out in Langley, and which, you know, generally I'm thinking if you're going to come to BC, I don't think you should go to Langley. I think you should stay in Vancouver. But, you know, it's kind of a nice little town, I guess. But in Langley, there's a little restaurant right by a 7-Eleven called Samey. And they do great. This Korean family runs it. They're just a tiny little place. And they do just fantastic, fantastic sushi there. So I go there with the dark one. And, you know, I mow down. And I've been mowing down on sushi there for the last, oh crap, 5 years. Okay, and every time you go, of course, these people are super traditional. So, you know, I tip big whenever I go. I mean, they give me great sushi, and the service is like bang, like right now. Like nobody does. I'm sorry, the Brits think they're cool with the service thing, and the French can look snooty, but nobody, and I mean nobody, knows hospitality like the Asians. I'm here to tell you. If ever there was a culture that knows the whole, got the whole hospitality thing down, that whole Asian or Oriental culture is just magic with that stuff. I really, you know, wow, we got so much to learn from those people. And so I used to tip big, and the next time I would go in, they would, like, give me free sushi. So now every time I go in there with my wife, I get, like, you know, my order plus, you know, five or six other things, which, of course, you have to eat. Otherwise, you offend these people, and it's really, you know, because there's a huge language barrier. They don't speak any English. I don't speak any Korean. It took me forever to figure out they were Korean. I thought it was Japanese for the longest time. Of course, sushi is, you know, I guess Japanese or whatever. I don't want to get into that. But regardless, you know, I would go in there. And this one time they made me this stuff. And hardcore sushi goers will know that this is expensive stuff. It's the first time I went in, they gave me this stuff that's made from the fatty undersection of a tuna. And apparently it's very rare. You only get like 4 pounds out of like a 1,000-pound fish or something like that. And I go in there late one night, and they give me this stuff, and you can see that it's special because it's totally dressed up. There's only 2 pieces on this plate. Me and my buddy Ronan Medic go in there, and we're waiting to eat the stuff. So we eat it, and of course it tastes like, you know, milky, cold crap, and we're like, you know, big smile on our face. This is great, thanks. Then the real delicacy came when they fed us. We went in there, and they made up this special, it's only in season like for 10 minutes every 10 years or some crap like that. It's some sort of sea anemone, okay? Now, I've eaten a lot of stuff, okay? This is the most disgusting stuff I've ever put in my mouth. I swear to God, do not go near the sea, whatever the hell this stuff is called. It tasted like wet, runny, psychotic, salty snot, okay, with the consistency of, like, I don't know, fish eggs. It was just absolutely grim. And I had to eat this stuff and smile, and everyone, because they were all watching us to see what we would do when we eat this stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, they could have been making fun of us, too. They're like, hey, let's see what we can make the crazy Canadian guy eat. But, you know, whatever. They it's a very, very cool place to go. And I love, you know, eating my sushi. But unfortunately now, it looks like I can't eat my sushi anymore because, well, the food may be toxic. And I'm sure that these guys wouldn't knowingly poison me. I mean, the dude who's making the sushi there, the guy's a wizard with a blade. You got to see him go. And he's, you know, right off the boat. He doesn't speak a lot of English. He knows his trade. He's a sushi chef. The guy's a genius. And you wonder, you know, he doesn't want to poison anybody. I mean, he's got his little family there, and he's got his religious plaque on the wall. And he's, you know, doing his thing. And the dude works like crazy hard every day. I mean, I just totally admire these people. But, you know, now they're unwittingly poisoning people with this ungodly high amounts of mercury. And that's just the mercury. Never mind everything else that we dump straight into the ocean here, okay? I mean, there's stuff that's going deep, deep, deep in the ocean. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, these earthquakes happen, you know, and stirs everything up. We don't know how much, you know, of our toxins and nuclear waste, whatever else we pump into the ocean, is then flushed and circulated because it's all a big round ball. Fish are eating this crap. It goes back in our bodies. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like steak. Okay, I do. I am a big carnivore, liking the eating of the cow, okay? I think that it should be an organic cow. I don't think the cow should suffer during its life. I think it should be like one day it'll be like, oh, tell me about the rabbits, buck, you know, and everything goes black, you know, and then we eat the cow, you know, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. You know, I don't want the cow to die. Hey, look over there, Bessie, hammer, you know, I'm cool. That's cool. I'll have some steaks. Bessie had a nice life. You know, everything's on the up and up. The feedlot thing, not down with that. Not down with feedlot. Not down with mad cow. Not down with animals never having any kind of contact, never being free. Not down with any of that. So we need to, you know, upgrade or change our meat industry or whatever we're going to do. But that's not going to happen right now. So we need to probably destroy the current, you know, feedlot, farm lot, you know, meat lot farming that's happening. And the only way to do that is to not buy their product. We vote with our dollars. You see, this is why some people would ask me, you know, what? How is it possible that you and Sim can be friends? Because he is rabidly vegan. The guy's more vegan than the Dalai Lama. And you can check me on that one. Because, dude, he is the most vegan dude I've ever met. The guy's got willpower. That's one thing I will respect about Sumerian, man. The guy has got willpower that has got me beat. If it was just a question of will, man, I wouldn't stand a prayer against the guy. Not a prayer. Okay, stubborn is a, you know, mild term. Okay, stubborn is like a childish sort of thing. He goes past, you know, he's got samurai and stuff saying, whoa, dude, you need to, like, slow down. Like, he is, whoa. And if he says something's going to happen and he's got the power to do it, he will, that incident will occur. So if you're considering changing your health habits, don't go rabidly vegan right off the top. Just start eating healthy food. Eat stuff that says organic on the front of it. You want to eat steak? Great. Eat organic steak. But it costs more. Yeah. Yeah, buddy. It does cost more. But it's going into your body. Okay? So you may as well buy the little bit better stuff. Stop buying the pop. Let's just tell all these companies to hell with it. I'm not into your toxins anymore. We're not going to eat them. You know, you want to eat meat? Go ahead. But don't eat toxic meat. This is really, like, don't eat poop. Okay? From an American military video, don't eat poop. It's one of the simple survival tips of living in these foreign countries. Don't eat poop. Dude, don't eat poop. Why would you eat poop? It's dumb. You know this stuff is toxic. You're the most educated and informed people, arguably, in the demographic of North America, yet we continue to poison ourselves because we're conditioned through media. So stop eating poop. American Isle Irons... Let me try that again. American Airlines is going Gestapo. American Airlines invents reasons to ask... This is a guy wrote in, and he said, American Airlines invents reasons to ask me for my dossier on my friends' home addresses. Come again. Ryan called American Airlines to ask why I was asked to produce a dossier of my friends' addresses when he flew from London to the U.S. last week. They responded in part, Mr. Doctorow exhibited specific behaviors and cues before and during our initial security screening that caused our screener to initiate a secondary screening process. That said, our contracted screener veered from standard procedure when she asked Mr. Doctorow to write the addresses of his destinations in the United States. She did clearly state that once the interview was completed, the address list would be destroyed in front of Mr. Doctorow so that he could have the list to keep. Mr. American Airlines absolutely does not register or record that type of personal data. Okay, kiss my ass. You have no right to ask me, American Airlines, just because you have American in your title, you're not a federal airline, dude. Okay, you can't ask me that stuff. Where am I going? I'm going there to sleep on the streets. Kiss my ass. Okay? I'm not a terrorist. I have my privacy. I'm going to the United States. We need to know why. No, you don't. Okay? There's two things wrong that are... Well, there's a lot of things that are wrong, but let's just stick with these two right here. The supposed TSA policy required me to write down a few of my friends' addresses wasn't just talked about by the screener, but also by her supervisor, who came by to lecture me about how this was for my own safety. Yeah. If this was one rogue screener overstepping her authority, then why didn't your supervisor overrule her instead of sticking to the story the TSA requires this of us? Yeah, okay. At no time did the screener or a supervisor ever state the list would be destroyed in front of me, nor that I could keep the list. In fact, all three AA security people I dealt with, the screener, her supervisor, and the terminal manager, told me they didn't know what would be done with the list after the interview, and they had no idea what the AA's document retention data privacy policies were. The letter Ryan received promised that I would receive written response to my letter as soon It'll be interesting to see if the AA repeats these untruths in it. I am also curious about the behaviors I exhibited. I went where I was directed and told the screeners when I got to the podium that I packed all my own luggage and kept it in my control since packing. Is it anticipating a security question, suspicious behavior? Well, you know, you're a foreigner. I'll bet there, Ryan, that you may not be white. You know, you got this kind of crazy last name. They don't know about this last name here. What's his last name? Doctor Rowe. Doctor Rowe. Could be, maybe he's black, you know. They still don't like black people, you know. It's scary when you have American Airlines asking you about where you're going. Why you going there? You been friends long? Huh? You fucking them? Huh? Is this why you're going there? Is this like a sexual thing? Like, dude, man, how much do you need to know here? Like, I'm an open guy, okay? I'm a kind of guy who wants to go all gargoyle and hook myself into the web so that I can have myself, you know, shared throughout all of server. This isn't because I'm just a massive exhibitionist, which, well, I suppose I kind of am. But realistically, I mean, it's just because I feel a certain attachment to WOGS, to the cyberpunk movement, to everyone, and I don't feel threatened by it. Because it's like walking around with a gang of a couple thousand people with you at all points in time. It's kind of nice. I am one of a million. Borg, you know, you will give me your list. No, you will lower your shields and surrender your ship. It's scary that American Airlines can do that. I don't think it's right. I'd like to find out what your legal rights are, but you got to be careful if you start reading Miranda to people in an airport. You can bank that's going to get a little crazy. When in doubt, keep your mouth shut. That's what I usually find. And if you have to say something, repeat the phrase, I have nothing more to say. I have nothing more to say. I think I would like a lawyer. I would like a lawyer now, please. Yes, I have nothing more to say. This is something that if you think things have gone horribly, horribly wrong, don't try to talk your way out of it, because they will take what you say, twist it around, and screw you with it. Okay? So just remember that. Number 9, more information is being imprisoned. Public access to FBI records could be diminished if the Bureau wins a court fight to limit the extent of searches required for documents requested under the Freedom of Information Act. Oh, yeah. A principal law to ensure openness in government. Because I bet they hate that. In court, the FBI is defending a recent automated search that missed some documents released years earlier in a separate FOIA case. Representing the FBI, the Justice Department asked a federal judge this month to dismiss the lawsuit that said its request should not be undermining by any successful search for document as long as the search was adequate. Well, the search obviously wasn't adequate if it missed stuff, isn't it? Justice Department guidelines say the law requires a search reasonably calculated to uncover all relevant documents. What the hell does that mean? The legal and academic critics say a search, in this case, didn't meet the standard. They said they suspect the transfer of records from paper to electronic files has been excuse for doing cursory searches that the government knows won't review all relevant documents. What a nice backwards way of doing that, eh? We all thought that digitization of government documents and electronic FOIA would mean greater public access. Well, not all of us thought that. But time and again, we've seen government agencies use it as an excuse for obfuscation, which is a fancy word for hidden, and it's also a power of the Nosferatu. Said Jane Kirtley, a University of Minnesota journalism professor who has waged many FOIA battles. They say, we don't have the software set up to find what you're looking for. We don't have the software set up to find what you're looking for. I bet you if I had some three letters like FBI or NSA or whatever behind my name, you could find whatever I wanted before coffee, baby. So tell you what, Jane, why don't you, you know, just stop screwing me around, all right? Go get me my documents that I asked for and a coffee while you're at it. I swear to God, man, these people piss me off. You know, they sit there and they've got these, whatever happened to that movie, The Patriot? Did anyone see The Patriot? This was a total Mel Gibson flag-waving film. As a Canadian, I rented it because, well, it has tomahawks in it. It's actually the only one of the few movies I've seen that has tomahawk fighting, so I'd recommend it to Americans for tomahawk fighting. But you know what? There's a lot of points that some of these groups in the United States who are really about the Constitution are really who the true Americans are. The true Americans aren't these clowns in Washington, okay, wearing suits. True Americans have got a lot of dirt on their hands. True Americans are people out there in America. In America. Okay, the mom and pops who aren't afraid of everyone. Every American I've ever met hasn't been terrified. Americans I've met have been the nicest people ever. They're nicer than the Canadians I've met. And that's saying something, dude. They've been friendly as hell to me. People are smiling in stores, chatting me up. It's great. I'm having a good time down there. Every time I go to the States, I'm looking forward to it. The only thing I'm afraid of is the gatekeepers. That's the only thing I'm scared of. I'm personally not afraid in America. Especially in, like, rural America. Who's afraid of those guys? They're nice. You can knock on a door the places I've been and everyone helps you. You know, as long as you smile and say, hi, I'm not from here, I'm Canadian, blah, 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 blah. They'll bend over backwards to help you. I don't know. It seems kind of a little bit weird to me when they start talking about, it's for your own security, it's for your own safety, we're going to get rid of the freedom of information. Why don't you put that shit to a vote? Now, Britain has opened up its UFO files. Now, this is kind of a little on the edge for me here. Well, not really. I'm kind of a UFO guy, too, but not so much. But check this out. It's access. And thanks to Britain's new Freedom of Information Act, the previously unseen files on UFOs are being released by the Ministry of Defense. In a highly unusual choice of words from the mainstream media, London Broadcasting, i.e. not tabloid, The Independent, which is a pretty high-flutin' magazine over there, calls some of the files compelling. Okay, to call stuff compelling regarding UFOs is a little bit trippy. Specifically, the article discusses sightings by a Royal Air Force pilot, two NCOs at an RAF facility, several captains and other crew members of commercial passenger flights, and a police superintendent. That's a superintendent, okay? Of course, the report also looks at ones that are completely, you know, full of crap. And that was found on the memory blog, I think by Ricky Rocket. And when you look at this, you think, whoa, you know, I wonder if there actually is something to all this UFO stuff. There must be. I've seen them. Sure, I saw one in the prairies. It wasn't much to talk about. I mean, it was a star that was doing funky stuff in the sky. All it was is this star doing, like, you know, geometric shapes that, you know, look like 7 billion feet in the air. And I'm like, wow, look at that light. Turned over to Jose and said, hey, man, check out the light. Of course, he killed himself 2 weeks later. But nevertheless, I don't think there was a connection. Send in the droids. Now, you know this one was coming. Made by a small Massachusetts company, the Swords. Short for Special Weapons Observation Reconnaissance Detection Systems, will be the first armed robotic vehicles to see combat. Now, I'm a little bit objective of the term robotic vehicle being used here, because clearly it's remote control. Years ahead of larger future combat system vehicles currently under development by big defense contractors such as Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics Corp. Years ahead of the larger future combat systems vehicles currently under development by big defense contractors such as Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics Corp. That means that those two massive companies are creating larger versions of these little ones that are robotic, which means they're hackable, which means we can take them. Well, not we, as in you and I, but it's possible, you know. It's easy to humanize the Swords, a tendency robotics researchers say is only human. Oh, that's so cute. It moves out of its flashy office building into the cold with a nary a shiver. Now, these robotic devices, which you can link to off of my live journal. Well, not directly. You know, there's articles about them. And these robotic devices are very interesting. Very, very interesting. Now, when I was younger and I heard about Isaac Asimov's iRobot, which, incidentally, if you read it, is, shall we say, different from the Will Smith movie, I'd read it purely because there's no advertising in it, unlike the massive shoe ad, which was iRobot. I'm sure Asimov hit about 7,000 RPM with that movie, because apparently it deviated. I haven't read iRobot, okay, so I can't say this, but the people who have read iRobot are like, I don't know why you called it iRobot, and I think even in the film it says based on the ideas presented in iRobot. iRobot talks about three laws safe, what the three laws safe are. I thought the three robotic laws were like this hardcore in-stone ethic thing that robotics engineers went with. I mean, it seems sort of like a general idea to me. So the whole concept of a robot with a gun killing people is, well, frightening. I think it's a bad idea. I don't really like the idea. I'm sure there's a lot of psycho Christians out there be like, it's the beast and all the rest of that crap. But realistically, no, I don't think an automated, totally autonomous, you know, robotic machine should decide to start blowing people away. I have a problem with that somewhat. I don't know, maybe it's my, you know, Skynet sense going off, but I just, you know, it makes me a little uncomfortable. You know, maybe it's the future, I can't get away from it. But now, you know, there is no three laws safe, and maybe we should pass some sort of legislation to make sure stuff is three laws safe. But then that leads to illegal droids and arming of weapons and so on and so forth. And how do you, you know, how do you compete against that? I think that robotic and autonomous drones, I mean, that's, in a way, it could be, because that's a pretty cowardly way to fight, but you're not putting yourself on the line. But realistically, it's a very good way to fight. We don't want to have, you know, our soldiers getting killed. But I'd also, rather than having our soldiers getting killed, I'd rather not there be any war. I think that most war can be avoided by small tactical groups, to be honest with you. Like large-scale wars, like the Second World War and stuff like that, that should be avoidable by strike teams and assassin teams and all that good SAS stuff. Yeah, it's unfortunate that that stuff has to occur, but if it prevents, like, large-scale, you know, Flanders Fields kind of stuff, I think it's a good idea. Now, those of you out there, you flying monkeys, you know who you are. The ones who, when I ask for stuff, they take to the air and they find it. Well, I got something for you to... I want... Old baby, I am so keen about this. This is a great story, and you're going to love this too. Go, my flying monkeys, and bring me to this doorstep. The Wear Body Armor doorstep. This was sent to me. It's a Wired article. I need a link to this guy's website. I want catalogs. It's probably going to be in Spanish. I don't care. Listen up. The right suit can make a guy feel invincible, especially if it's bulletproof. A Colombian fashion designer, I'm going to screw this up, Miguel Caballero, specializes in Euro-style men's ready-to-wear that's light, elegant, and can stop 9mm slugs. Colombia is an ideal place for this kind of business, Caballero says. First, because of the high quality of its leather, and second, because of a high index of violence. The fail-safe fashionetta has spun paranoia and vanity into a $3 million a year international business. The clothing looks nothing like body armor. A trench carp, for example, is beltless, full-length number with a slim line made with gabardine and Kevlar. I don't use Kevlar alone any longer because it's heavy and rather uncomfortable, Calibero says. Okay, now that is sexy. I've got to get to this guy's website because you know what else he makes? Wait, it's not just the trench coats. No, no, no. Oh, God, I love the cyberpunk era. He also makes denim and suede jackets, sport coats, and a line of armored t-shirts, okay, that are popular in Spain. He says he has hundreds of fans throughout Europe, Asia, and Latin America. Yeah, set me up. Somebody has got to put this stuff online. This has got to be online somewhere. Go to my live journal. Under the flying monkey target, you can go and see if you can find this, because I don't got time to hunt it myself. But I'm sure those of you who are waiting for something to do, please, oh, please, 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 tell me where I can get it, and then I'll put it on my show, and then we can all get it. Now, here's a scary report card. The British report, meeting the climate challenge, is aimed at policymaking in every country from the nation leaders down. It has been timed to coincide with Tony Blair's promised efforts in advancing climate change in Europe in 2005 as chairman of both G8 and a group of rich countries in the European Union. And it breaks new ground by putting a finger for the first time on such a high-level document on the danger point of global warming. Now, this is something to look at. I don't care if global warming is a natural cycle or not, but check this out. That is the danger point, the temperature rise beyond which the world would irretrievably be committed to disastrous changes. That means there is no sway back. That means that it's like a, you know, the spark point of a match. Beyond that, it's no more a match. It's now a burnt little cinder. These could include widespread agricultural failure, water shortages, and major droughts, increased disease, sea level rise, and the death of forests. Now, does any of this sound sort of familiar? With the added possibility of abrupt, catastrophic events such as a runaway global warming and the melting of Greenland ice sheet or the switching off of the Gulf Stream, all that good day after tomorrow stuff. The report says this point will be 2 degrees centigrade above the average world temperature prevailing in 1750 before the Industrial Revolution, when human activities mainly produced the waste of greenhouse gas such as carbon dioxide. Okay, now, it says that we're going to reach that point. We've been raising by 0.8 degrees ever since then, and just recently we're going up by almost something like 2 degrees a year. Bottom line, within 10 years, we're going to hit that point. Within the next 10 years. Anybody want to bet for 2012? Just a guess. You know, that wouldn't that just all be nice and synchronistic. But they're saying that within the next 10 years, we're going to be going through, we're going to have irreversible change to global climate. And if you think you don't need bulletproof clothing now, baby, wait until you have natural, like, look at what happened with the tsunami, okay? Everybody's trying to take everything over there because nobody has anything. So now everybody's trying to, you know, recruit child soldiers. I mean, everything's taking a crap. Now, you start applying that to the Western world, and we got problems, Jack. I mean, I like the fashion, don't really like the culture of the whole cyberpunk thing. I'm not really into walking around with a samurai sword because I need to. I'd rather walk around with a samurai sword because it's cool. Okay, it's not cool to have to actually fight. Violence is not cool, just in case you're wondering. Now, final story. Anyone remember that whole, there's not going to be a draft? How's that draft working out for you there, George? Well, Rand, you remember Rand? Rand is those guys who brought us the internet. Rand is a nasty sort of, they're like the shop from the Stephen King books. Rand seeks a way to avoid the draft. Now, they know that they're having problems. A reliable source tells me that Rand has been contracted by the government to come up with a way to avoid instituting a draft, despite desperate need for more combat forces. Now, they're already saying that they don't want to bring in, they don't want to bring in a draft, and they're stopping people from leaving with their stop-loss program, where like, they, you signed up, you dumb sucker program. The solution? Outsource desk and logistic jobs to private companies while pushing those chairborne warriors out of the offices and into fighting units. Okay, dude, people who signed up to be postal clerks did not sign up to kick in doors. All right? That was not the bill of goods they signed on for. I'm all about people who signed up to be infantry doing infantry jobs. But don't tell me I'm going to get some... It's dangerous, okay? Above everything else, it's dangerous. A lot of these people do not have what it takes to be kicking in doors, especially against people who've been fighting their entire lives. This is going to cost lives. This is a bad, bad idea. Now, never mind the security threat that comes from privatizing your military logistics. Excuse me? No. No. The last thing I want is some fat 12 sandwich-eating civilian telling me that I can't go pick up my buddies because their logistics is jammed, or Microsoft blue screen. You can kiss my ass. Okay, I'm, one other thought in this report. Female soldiers are generally related to non-combat support occupations. Would combat units be open to women in this scenario? That will, again, be a bad idea. Why is that, you ask? Well, because there's all been all kinds of reports done that it doesn't work. Okay, if they bring in this idea, they're gonna completely screw the U.S. Army if they do that. Okay, it's gonna fuck everything up, and it's gonna cost a lot of lives. So we're gonna want to follow that. Now, here's a daily hack that I guarantee you didn't know about, but it's pretty pertinent. How to steal your own car? It seems that car thieves have found yet another way to steal your car or truck without any effort whatsoever. The car thieves peer through your windshield onto your car, write down the VIN number from the label on the dash, go to a local car dealership, and request a duplicate key based on the VIN number. I didn't believe that you could do this, so I called Chrysler Dodge and pretended I'd lost my keys. They told me just to bring in my VIN number, and they would cut me one on the spot. I could order a keyless entry device if I wanted one. The car dealer's parts department make duplicate keys from the VIN number and collect payment from the thief, who would then return to your car. If you don't believe it, check it out yourself. So, bottom line here, make sure you cover the VIN numbers on your vehicles. Okay, a little bit of black electrician's tape. Make sure that they can't get your VIN number. Make sure that all your... As a matter of fact, any data that you don't have to display, don't display it. Don't show logos, don't show VIN numbers, don't show any numbers that anyone can just take and use against you. This information is your information. Let's keep track of our physical layer of security, eh? That's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of the magical people who donated money for the month of December are Jesse, Lars, Michael, Matt, Andrew, Kevin, Derek, Eric, Jason, Peter, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, Timor, Greg, Richard, WebLife, Drac, Matt, Evan, Brian, Ashton, David, Austin, Jonathan, Adam, William, Trevor, Jonathan, Mark, Kitsune, Art, Matthew, Christopher, Kyle, Justin, and Matthew. And yes, there is real affection in my voice when I say these names because I love them, because they're the people who actually have stood up and stepped up to the line, and I respect them very deeply for doing that. And honestly, if I could read you guys more props and give more props out, unfortunately, you're supporting me, and that might get you in trouble, so I can't do that. So I can only respectfully say thank you so very much. I also want to say thank you to... If you want to help keep my Daily Brews news broadcast on the air, that's for the month of December. We're still got time to get in on the month of January. If you want to get in on that and be read out every day of the month, you can go to rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. Special thanks to the reporters Dr. Marius, Transix, Sylvanus, Evil Vossenary, hey, ever hear of the Dead Kennedys? Zijin Machina, Ricky Rocket, Resonant, who is one smart cookie, Matt, Meg Progman, Preator, or yeah, I think I'm saying that right, and Rebel Whore for their assistance in gathering data. And if you have access to information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. And if you like the groovy music in the background, that's right, it's another album by Astral Projection. And I am loving these guys. This one's called The Astral Files, and it's just absolutely badass. So make sure you check out them. They're one of the better Goa Psytrance bands going right now, I think. I'm just grooving on them. You know, they're not too heavy on the samples, but they do have a nice dark tone to them. So until tomorrow, everyone, that's what Server said. End of line.
You can tell when animals are scared, but do they feel fear in the same way as we do? And what about computers? Could you teach one to feel scared, or would it just be responding in the way you'd programmed it to?
Certainly for your PC on your desk, it's probably useful for it not to have any emotions at all. But if we're sending out robots to other planets to prepare the way for human settlement, then we may find that it's necessary to endow them with some emotions, just as emotions are necessary for animals to survive in dangerous and unpredictable environments. So we should also expect that they will be necessary for any kind of autonomous agent, including a robot, to survive in those kinds of situations.
Computers can learn to react to unpredictable events and to prioritise what they do. But are we actually making them frightened? Aren't we just telling them that if they see something large and unfamiliar, they should run away?
That is an emotion in my vocabulary. I mean, what is an emotion in a human except some kind of routine that allows us to do the same as that? You can actually do this with robots that you can buy in the shops these days. One of the most simple routines for a robot is whenever it approaches an obstacle or a wall, before it hits that, it recoils in what looks to any observer like an expression of fear or a desire at least not to get hurt by rushing into that obstacle. Okay, a lot of people will say that we're anthropomorphizing them, but as the behavior routines in those robots resemble ours ever more closely, then I think the idea that we're simply projecting our own emotions onto mere mechanical objects will become less and less tenable.
But would they actually mind being scared?
I think what you're trying to get at is the idea of feelings. In humans, a typical emotional episode would involve not just changes in behaviour and changes in thought patterns, but also changes in our physiology, our posture, facial expressions, and, crucially for many people, in our feelings and our subjective experience of those emotions. Now, a robot may lack, for example, the subjective feeling of an emotion, and some people would say that that disqualifies them from having an emotion. Even if we do concede that view, there's no reason, in principle, why computers couldn't eventually acquire even the feeling side of emotions.
Would that be useful for us at all?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question. What is the purpose over and beyond the obvious behavioural aspects of emotion, like running away, of having the subjective conscious feeling? Does that serve any purpose? I think that's one of the toughest questions in science at the moment. Why did consciousness evolve?